Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Manny Eck.
He wanted to do something important with his life, so Adam Braun founded a nonprofit that is changing lives worldwide.
Every project is uniquely catered to that community, but 20% of the funding, on average, comes from the community itself. We want locals supporting other locals.
We will meet a woman who is inspiring others to tell their long-lost stories.
There are so many stories not told. There's so many histories and people left out of our histories. That's what my work has to be now.
An iconic jazz music label celebrates an anniversary.
And we'll take a look at X-Men Days of Future Past.
That's all coming up on this Monday edition of Now.
Have you ever wanted to change the world?
By the time he was 25, Adam Braun had a vision of what he wanted to do in life and the legacy he wanted to leave behind.
In 2008, Braun founded Pencils of Promise, a nonprofit, or what he prefers to call a for-purpose organization, to ensure all children have access to education.
As Faiza Almasri and Faith Lapidus tell us, Braun's organization is breaking ground on a new school every 90 hours and has reached more than 22,000 children in Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
It all started when Adam Braun visited India as a college student. A boy begging on the street approached him asking for money. Braun asked the boy what he'd want if he could have anything in the world.
And I thought their answer was going to be a house or a car or a boat, and his answer was a pencil. And so I gave him my pencil, and he just lit up with joy, and I realized that he had never been to school before, and that that was the reality for 57 million children around the world.
After graduation, Braun started working in finance and was on the path to a successful Wall Street career. But he never forgot that boy and the problem he represented.
We live in a world in which every single child can have access to quality education because we have everything necessary already. We have the capability of educating every child. And so I just became immensely committed to helping create that world.
Using social media, Braun spread the word about his mission and raised money. He funded construction of the first Pencils of Promise school in Laos 5 years ago. Since then, his organization has helped finance more than 200 schools in remote rural areas of Laos, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Ghana. In each country, he says, his organization works closely with the ministries of education.
Those are the ones who craft the original curriculum, but we provide additional sanitation, health, and water curriculum, essentially teaching kids to live healthy, holistic lives.
Pencils of Promise, he says, also works closely with the local communities.
Every project is uniquely catered to that community, but 20% of the funding, on average, comes from the community itself. We want locals supporting other locals.
Rallying people around a common goal of education is something that generally brings communities very close together.
Leslie Engel-Young is director of Impact for Pencils of Promise.
We started saying, okay, how can we get your 20%? What components of labor can you do? You know, what materials do you have you can contribute to the project? And through this really organic conversation, we start building a true partnership with these people.
Young says she's amazed at the feedback they receive from parents and grandparents every time a new school is built. People are willing to pool efforts and resources. They're thrilled to see their kids have an opportunity to learn.
I was just in Ghana at the opening ceremony of a new kindergarten in the community of Likbi, which is in the northern part of the Volta region where we operate in Ghana. And there's probably 300 people sitting around this new school site. One parent got up and said, give the students a charge, basically saying to them, like, this is your school. You need to make the best of it. It is your right to have an education, and now it is your job to take advantage of that right and see where you can go in the future. This school is not going to be enough. We are going to make sure that this is more than a building. Teachers, you are going to show up regularly. You are going to do good work. We are going to help you do that good work. And really just demanding a lot out of people, which is great.
Enthusiasm like that inspired Adam Braun to broaden his organization's reach beyond the elementary school level.
So we developed scholarships, which enable them to continue through secondary school, as well as teacher training. And we are really rigorous about making sure that the programs aren't just beautiful photos and videos of kids, but that we're actually seeing incredible results in the classroom. And if we're not seeing results, then we need to change our programs. So thus far, kids in Pencils of Promise schools progress from one grade to the next at 2 times the national average.
In his new book, The Promise of a Pencil, Braun shares his story, building up his nonprofit, pursuing his dream, and proving that one ordinary person can create extraordinary change. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Starts in my toes, makes me crinkle my nose. Wherever it goes, I always know that you make me smile. Please stay for a while now, just take your time.
Manny, have you ever explored your ancestry?
Yes, I have. A few years ago, I asked my grandfather, this is my mother's father, about our ancestors. He is in his late 80s, but his mind is still very sharp.
Cool.
And according to him, my great-grandfather was a small businessman from mainland China, and he came to Cambodia to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
But as I understand it, you can check your family history online as well, right?
Yeah, I actually signed on to a website that will search your genealogical history and stuff like that. I actually found relatives going back five generations, including three ancestors that fought in the U.S. Civil War.
Wow, it's quite a family history. I mean, I don't know if we can do the same in Cambodia. We don't have a habit of keeping records, and if we did, I'm sure it was probably all destroyed in the war.
Which is exactly what the woman we're about to meet is doing. She says that telling someone else's story has become her life passion.
Tom Bonzi introduces to Linda Danon, who hopes to inspire others to bring out their stories of people who have been left out of our histories.
The waterfront cottage Linda Danon calls home overlooks a cultural crossroads rich in history. She's a cultural anthropologist by profession, so her eyes and ears are tuned to signs and stories of place. At this place, waves of settlers came from the earliest times to reap shellfish. This crunch, crunch underneath here.
Yes.
We're on a white beach in some respects, but it's not white sand like in Hawaii. These are all oyster shells.
These are Pacific oyster shells, and these are left from the time when the Brenner Oyster Company was a going thing. And so we have...
It's quite the going thing. The Danon moved here in the early 1970s, and she heard enough tales about one pioneer to start a file, this on a Katie Gale. Gail was an independent businesswoman who owned property and tidelands in her own name in the late 1800s.
And that was all a little bit unusual from sort of conventional wisdom or things that I'd heard about both people in the oyster business and Native American women.
The biographer was fascinated by how Gail straddled different worlds and stood up for herself and her mixed-race children.
I suppose there were just too many things about that that intrigued me, that I couldn't let go of it. And I literally couldn't let go of it for years.
A turning point came when Danon and several friends from the Historical Society discovered an overgrown homestead graveyard a mile from her house. One of the headstones belonged to Katie Gale.
I was so amazed, excited, enthralled that I began beating on Stan's shoulders as he was kneeling in front of me holding the stone.
Her friend had to plead with her to contain her excitement.
I literally said, "I know who this is," as if she were an acquaintance of mine, but it almost felt that way. And that became, I would say, that was a moment of calling. I have to tell this woman's story. I have to know her.
But the long-dead Katie Gale left no letters, no journals. Danon could find no photographs of her, no living descendants. The best source material was a divorce case file. It took almost a decade to accumulate corroborating details, context, and enough educated guesses to write a biography. Katie Gale, A Coast Salish Woman's Life on Oyster Bay, was published last fall. But the tale doesn't stop there.
There are so many stories not told. There's so many histories and people left out of our histories. That's what my work has to be now. I feel that it's my obligation to do that.
That's how come Danon is a guest speaker in a writing class at the Evergreen State College Longhouse in Olympia.
So good morning, everybody. The first thing I'd like to
She encourages the students to bring forth stories before they're lost, perhaps starting with family history. This is the message that Danon returns to again and again in regular public talks and one-on-one mentoring.
You're able to find out a lot, more than you think.
All of the students in the circle facing the author this day are Native American. It takes a while, but eventually sensitivities come out.
I was really hesitant about taking the class.
This student's grandmothers warned her against exposing too much of their Spokane tribal heritage to outsiders who might twist it or exploit it. Macaw tribal member Vince Cook heard that from his elders, too.
That's a tough one, because when I was younger, we were told not to record, not to videotape.
Cook says attitudes are changing now as people see tradition and culture slipping away. He feels spurred to write about his great-grandmother and all the things she taught him.
I think it's important to continue on, not only for myself, but for my family and for others to know about the macaw culture and to keep it alive.
Amateur folklorist Cy Matta feels similar urgency. He focuses on gathering the stories of his ancestors from the Cascade Indian tribe, who once lived and fished in the Columbia River Gorge. Matta is soliciting and sharing material and old photographs via a website and Facebook page. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia, Washington.
This year marks a special anniversary for anyone who knows anything about jazz.
75 years ago, two German immigrants who fell in love with jazz founded Blue Note Records.
As Richard Paul tells us, the label has lasted by letting artists be themselves and by keeping its doors open to new talent.
Nothing that becomes legendary starts out that way. In 1939, Blue Note Records was the grain of an idea by Alfred Lion and Frank Wolfe, two Germans who fell in love with music like this by boogie-woogie piano player Albert Ammons. They first heard jazz improvisation as young men in Germany during the early years of the Nazi regime. Richard Havers is writing a book about Blue Note called Uncompromising Expressions. He says that, to the Nazis,
jazz was everything that they hated. It was freedom of expression. It was not regimented. It didn't go to a militaristic beat.
Lion and Wolf pursued their love of jazz and freedom by leaving Germany for the United States. Shortly after arriving and hearing Ammons and another boogie-woogie piano player, Mead Lux Lewis, they scratched together some money, put Ammons in a studio, and Blue Note Records was born. The label was swimming against the tide by promoting this kind of music. Dan Ouellette has written a book about Blue Note called Playing by Ear.
Back then, it was all about dancing.
And people were not dancing to boogie-woogie piano. Ouellette says Alfred Lion's approach was more like a museum curator than a record producer.
He wanted to document this music. His whole philosophy is that jazz is an art form.
Treating artists as artists and swimming against the tide became hallmarks of Blue Note jazz, an approach that finally paid off in the 1940s when jazz shifted away from the dance music of the big band era and toward a new form that came to be called bebop. According to Richard Havers,
Lion quickly realized that jazz was moving in a different direction, and the first of the new wave of artists that he recorded was Thelonious Monk, who he absolutely adored.
Thelonious Monk was famous for playing the wrong notes. Many people thought it was just rubbish.
But while most of the music business didn't understand artists like Monk, Richard Havers says this was another example of Blue Note treating artists like artists.
Alfred Lion gave his artists the freedom to do what they wanted to do. They felt they were artists. They were not money machines.
Blue Note was well respected and had some financial success, but by the 1960s, Dan Ouellette says things were not looking good for Blue Note or jazz.
Rock music and the beginnings of funk were coming around, and people are running away in droves because of rock music.
In 1967, Alfred Lion sold Blue Note to another record company. They drove it into the ground. In a rush to make money quickly, they stopped paying for rehearsal time and otherwise alienated the label's biggest stars, many of whom left to go to other record companies. The label got a reprieve in 1981 and had another long run of artistic success, but by the early 2000s, according to the current head of Blue Note, producer Don Was,
there was a lot of talk about closing the label down, making it a website that sold catalog and blue t-shirts.
Instead, the label decided to revive itself again. Mainly by turning back to a way of working that would make Alfred Lion proud. According to current Blue Note artist Jason Moran, today, as they did in the past,
people just went in and they make their music. You follow the intuition of the artist and the artist that they work with, and you come together to make a recording.
This return to the old ways is paying off, according to Dan Willett.
The music that you're hearing today with some young artists like Robert Glasper and Jason Moran, the music is evolving. It's not staying put. It's not dying.
For VOA News, I'm Richard Paul.
How about you? Are you a jazz fan?
Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And speaking of Facebook, a few days ago, I posted a question on VOA Khmer Facebook page. I'm not sure if you know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Asking them how they feel about Facebook. I mean, does it make you happier or less happy?
Mm-hmm.
And we had over 120 comments.
Wow.
It was amazing. Overall, my peeps, my people, pretty much feel that Facebook makes them happier. But there are a few who feels it makes them less happy. For example, Tatsman said, Facebook has advantages and disadvantages. Sometimes it makes you happy when you are stressed or when you feel lonely. And it makes you less happy when you use it too much or when you are being exploited.
Hmm. Well, Ton Ka said he agrees. Facebook makes me happier. He's kind of an addict into it with funny comments, travel pics, and society. He's not kidding. LOL.
Kimmy Chi said, I am never happy without Facebook.
Hmm. Lang Nagata said, it's wasted my time and my relationship in the real face.
And Kim Yin said, Facebook is most useful if we know how to use it. But if we don't know how to use it, it is useless.
Hmm. Well, we would be interested in your comments. You can log on to our VOA Asia Facebook page and post them there. And we might read them on a future show.
Tomorrow way too far away. And we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now. We got right now. So get up right now. 'Cause all we got is right now.
Manny, do you like superhero movies like Superman, Batman, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Iron Man, Superman, the X-Men.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the summer Hollywood blockbuster movie season gets into full swing this week with the latest installment of the X-Men franchise, Days of Future Past.
Mutants, we now find ourselves on the edge of extinction. Need to go into the past to end this war before it ever begins.
The movie combines the original cast, including Patrick Stewart, Sir Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, and Hugh Jackman, with the cast from X-Men First Class.
The mutants have to join forces to fight mechanical sentinels that are bent on destroying humanity.
Patrick Stewart plays Dr. Charles Xavier, the founder of the X-Men, and himself a mutant with the power to read and control people's thoughts.
Stewart says the film uses fantasy to speak about current issues.
It has social content, which is very, very pertinent today and throughout the world. The whole question of otherness
of being different, of being an outsider or an alien in what is considered a normal world.
Hugh Jackman plays Logan, better known as Wolverine, who has to go back in time in order to prevent a catastrophe in the future that dooms both humans and mutants.
I was sent here for you.
From the future? 50 years from now.
Can you give me that one more time, please?
Stay with me. In the beginning, the Sentinels were just targeting mutants. Then they began targeting everyone. They've come a long way to guide us, to bring us together, the X-Men.
Jackman says that Days of Future Past combines all the elements X-Men fans have come to expect under the expert hand of director Bryan Singer.
I mean, it's the biggest of all the movies. It's part time travel movie, and it reunites all the original X-Men with all the X-Men from First Class, so it's kind of the most amazing acting ensemble.
The film also features Game of Thrones star Peter Dinklage as anthropologist Bolivar Trask, who sees the rise of mutants as a threat to humanity.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hello. Thank you for coming. With this weapon, there will be no human collateral damage. If I turn it on, the system couldn't even activate in here.
Where's that?
Unless there's a mutant.
Dinklage says that Trask thinks he is saving humanity, but almost destroys it instead when his mechanical sentinels eventually turn against all humans.
He's a very smart man, and he's definitely sees what he's doing as something that's beneficial to the whole world, saving ourselves from the higher species as he sees them. He's done his homework about Darwin's evolution and the previous species always gets left in the dust.
Chinese actress Fan Bingbing stars as the teleporting superhero Blink.
The X-Men franchise has grossed $2.3 billion worldwide. Hugh Jackman says that Hollywood has come to see China as a huge, untapped market.
I think the more international movies are, the better. We live in a world which is increasingly interdependent, so why shouldn't the movies be? And I think the Chinese market in particular is just booming, you know. So the larger the market becomes, the more the stories are going to reflect what that market wants. You know, that's, I think, is a positive. I see collaboration in every way as a positive.
The 45-year-old Jackman has been in every X-Men movie in the past 14 years.
The Australian actor was also recently treated for skin cancer, something that he said he is glad was caught early.
The beauty of this is it's all preventable. It's just about getting proper checkups. So I can be typical man, a little lazy, I can be bothered, and now I'm not lazy at all. I'm not lazy about staying out of the sun, I'm not lazy about getting checkups, I'm far more aware.
X-Men Days of Future Past also star Oscar winner Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, Sir Ian McKellen as Magneto, and Halle Berry as Storm.
Scottish actor James McAvoy reprises his role as a young Charles Xavier, while Michael Fassbender is back as the young Magneto.
Everything that happens now is in your hands.
X-Men Days of Future Past opens in the United States and on many screens worldwide May 23rd.
I got my ticket for the long way round.
And we want to thank you for joining us for this edition of Now.
We would love to hear your questions or comments. You can post them on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might read one of your comments on a future show.
We are also on Twitter. Our address there is at Now VOA Show.
And you can email us. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until next time, I'm Manny Eck.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Now.
by my talk. Oh, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone.